This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman.
And we're having 20-minute talks with entrepreneurs teaching you how to launch your product into revenue.
Check out our book at howtobuildarocketship.com to reserve your launch discount and to download a free chapter.
Okay, today we talked with Mark Fidelman, Forbes columnist and founder of Rainforest. He shared some incredible tips for how to get content published and your company promoted in big publications like Forbes. They're techniques that anyone can use, and if you ever thought the only way to get written about was to take a big round of funding, he'll prove you wrong. Great actionable stuff in this interview.
Hey guys, this is Joelle. Little disclaimer here. A few weeks ago, we sat down to record a handful of episodes in the same room rather than Skype, which is what we usually do. And the audio quality, unfortunately, came out pretty terrible. We tried our best to make it better, but it's still not great. And this is one of those episodes. Hang in there. Future ones will be a lot better, but the content is still really awesome. So stick with it. Thanks.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. We're here with Mark Fidelman. He is a Forbes contributor, author of Socialized, and the CEO of Rainforest. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Michael. Really appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about how you got started with Rainforest and kind of the timeline between Socialized and launching Rainforest.
Sure, yeah. So Rainforest is a marketplace for influencers to be hired by brands to promote products and services. And it all came about because another company you haven't mentioned yet, but I own a consulting company called Evolve, and we've been doing this manually for clients for a long time. The problem with doing it manually: very, very difficult to do. We don't know if the influencer is going to work with the brand, if they're even capable, whether they can move the needle, what have you. So we developed Rainforest in order to automate all the things that we were doing manually with the consulting company.
What are some of the challenges you've run into from automating that process?
Well, I mean, some of the simple things that you don't really think about when you're developing the software. I mean, how do you get an influencer and a brand to run a campaign as simple as review my product? You know, the brand's got one thing in mind, the influencer has another. So how do you make sure that you walk them through a process that makes sure that both come to a mutual understanding and you can monitor and measure and rate that progress all the way from beginning to end? And that in itself, believe it or not, took us 3 months to figure out. So this is complicated stuff. We're making this easy. I mean, that's our goal.
So how long were you doing this manually, just so we can kind of understand the timeline of business growth here?
Yeah, I did it 4 years. It was an accident. It happened on a blog. I just basically did a survey to 25 very influential people in open source. I asked them who influenced them. I mean, literally, this was a fluke. I just threw the question in there. They all answered. I came up with 10 names that were the most influential in open source. And to my knowledge, no one other than a Forbes or a major magazine had ever published a list like this before. But we did it on a blog in San Diego, and we had 600,000 views in 6 hours.
Wow.
And cracked our servers, and the press was going out and interviewing the people on the list in London. Larry Augustin was number one at the time. In London, all over the world, the press got involved. It just became a firestorm, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, there's something here. So it all started 4 years ago, and obviously within those 4 years, there have been a lot of copycats, which is fine. You know, that's what happens. But we've really been able to perfect this to an art, I'd say, at this point. So 4 years later, we've kind of codified that and put it into the Rainforest platform.
So, and that post was sports-related?
No, it wasn't. It was all about open source influencers. Sports came about, and that is my focus. Thank you for bringing that up, Michael. Sports is a focus because if you look at somebody like myself, I've got almost 100,000 followers on Facebook. And then you look at, somewhat famous snowboarder, not Sean White, but maybe the next tier down, with the same amount of followers. So when I post something on Facebook, I might get 20, 30, maybe 40 responses. But these guys get 5,000 responses with the same amount of followers because they have that deep emotional connection with their followers that I, you know, schmuck like me could never have. So that is why we chose sports. And I think I alluded to this earlier when we were talking. There's only one group with more of a powerful impact than sports professionals. And that are those people are singers and performers.
And how did you figure out that sports was going to be your niche? Did you just try a few different industries and call into it? Or did you have a pretty good idea that that's exactly where you wanted to go?
I wish I was that smart, but I'm not. We just did experimentations, and when you look side by side, somebody that's in sports that's talking about something that's related to what they do and it's authentic, I mean, key is being authentic, they can move the needle like no one else can. I mean, hands down, if you know, Kelly Slater, who's one of the world's most popular surfers, says, hey, this is a surfboard that you should be using, and you know, as opposed to somebody like me who says it, he's going to have 10, if not 100 times the impact than I would.
So what are some examples of campaigns that you're running with these influencers?
So right now we're running one for one of the largest phone manufacturers in the world. What we're doing is we're giving them a phone and we're saying, you know, just start using it, take pictures, upload your favorite apps to this social network. There's an app social network up there. Just give us your overall impression of the phone. And so we did. We ran the campaign. It's still in progress because the first tranche was so good. And, you know, we're just getting the figures back from that campaign. But we're talking tens of millions of impressions, a couple of million views, I think we had over 10,000 shares. The bottom line is, for very, very little money, by activating these people, by just giving them a free product and asking them to promote it if they like it, they totally turned the image of this particular phone around.
So how are you actually measuring? You're talking about moving the needle for these companies. How are you measuring that first manually, and then how did you automate that?
Believe it or not, there's a wide variety of tools that are out there that can measure a URL. So it'll go and take a look at a URL, and it'll say, this is how many times it was shared on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, what have you. We use a combination of tools. One is GroupHi. GroupHi is a great place to not just find influencers. They're like the white pages of influencers. You're not going to be able to hire them there, but like you can on Rainforest, but you can find them, as well as track the performance of campaigns that are run. There are quite a few tools actually that are out there that'll track a URL. If you type it in, and you'll spit back, here's how many times it was shared, here's how many times it was viewed. So that's where we do it manually. Rainforest has a whole automated set of solutions that measure a campaign, tell you how well they performed.
And do you charge per campaign, or is it a monthly deal where they're getting connected with a certain amount of people?
Yeah, at this point, we're just charging per campaign. So if you're a brand and you want to spend $10,000 or $1,000 on a campaign, we'll take 20%.
Cool. So you are also a Forbes contributor. And tell us a little bit about your journalistic background.
Well, the funny thing is I have none. I'm probably the worst journalist until 4 or 5 years ago. What happened is I failed writing in college, and it was embarrassing. I consider myself a victim of the California public school system. So I failed it, and I was so embarrassed by that, I had to take remedial writing, and they almost kicked me out. And it's a nice school, and I almost kicked out. So I took that embarrassment, and I said, look, I'm not going to be the worst writer in the world. Let's see how far I can get, as close to becoming a great writer as possible. So ever since then, I've been practicing on becoming a better writer. And that led me, because of my focus, that led me on a path to Forbes. And it's kind of a long path. I could elaborate if you want. I don't know if we have enough time, but it's about starting with your own blog, getting syndicated, getting picked up by a third tier site, then a second tier site, making sure you move the needle for that second tier site. And then, somebody like Forbes will come along and pick you up if you really have the audience and you really can move the needle.
So now that you've gotten this kind of sphere of influence, what advice would you have for someone in a smaller startup that maybe isn't raising funding to craft that story so that someone like you would write about it?
Okay, so this is a great question, right? I mean, this is something that's taken me a long time to figure out, even though I'm on both sides. So the one thing, guys like me get paid per view. So you've got to provide stories that are going to drive views for that journalist. One of the more less expensive ways to do that is to create infographics or some kind of visual content that when is put into a blog post or put into the press will drive, a lot of views for that reporter. So the first thing the reporter says to himself when somebody like a startup pitches them is, is this company interesting? And if that answer is yes, then it's, okay, the idea that they're giving me, the angle they're giving me, is that going to drive views amongst my audience? And if that's a yes, then the third question is, does this take priority over the 1,000 other requests I'm getting from everybody else? And if the answer is yes, then you'll probably more than likely get them to write about you. But you've got to think like them in order to present information that they're going to pick up. So a lot of startups make the mistake of just thinking, hey, I think it's interesting. So, I think the press should too. And if they don't pay attention to me, it's the press's fault. I'm not, I don't know what goes through their minds, but yeah. I just thought for you. How you get what you do in order to get them to cover you.
So, what would be the best way to approach kind of journalists in general? What works for you when startups have approached you?
The best thing that you could do for me is start promoting the heck out of everything I'm doing right now. So I would stalk these reporters on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, wherever their social channels are. And just, you know, don't ask for anything. Just keep promoting the heck out of it, commenting on everything I do on the blogs. Just get my attention. And at some point, I'm going to feel so guilty that you're doing all this work for me that I'll say, okay, I'll listen to you. And I might not print the first one that comes up, or I do a lot of summary posts. My next one's a summary post. I might mention you in a summary post. But the key is build a relationship with these journalists over time by helping them. And then walk through those three steps that I discussed before. You've got to make sure you can move the needle for these guys because they're being paid on view counts. And
awesome advice, yeah. So how do you mean you get paid on view counts? How does that work?
It's a little more complicated than that, but essentially it boils down to if you drive unique views, it's at one price. If you drive just overall traffic that's returning, you know, you get a little bit different amount of money for that. If, you know, it's shared a lot, there's different tiers of, you know, how much money you'll be given for that. And I'm not talking just Forbes. I'm talking everyone's got their own formula, but it does boil down to views. So you want people coming to the site and interacting with the content. Comments is another one. So you want to encourage, if you're a startup and you actually get something printed, you want to encourage your friends, family, whoever you can bribe to get up there, share it, and comment on it. Because, you know, if you move the needle for these guys, they're more likely to cover you in the future. And you can go to another journalist and say, hey, look what we did for Joe over at TechCrunch. This is an article he did. We framed it for him, gave him the angle. We promoted the heck out of it. You know, got people to comment on it, and Joe made a lot of money from that article. So when Sally sees it over at VentureBeat, she's more likely to cover your startup.
And what is the needle for you? Is it 10,000, 100,000?
10,000 is low for me, but yeah, I'd say if you got it over 10,000, I think they'd be very happy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you mentioned certain kinds of content, like infographics. Yes. Do a little better. They're very easily shared. People like to tweet and post those things to Facebook. What other kinds of content get shared more often than not? Because a lot of times you're just seeing a lot of stories about who's got funding this week. But what other kind of niche content can smaller startups maybe take a different angle on to get in front of you?
Well, if you're very creative on video, you know, you could do a quick Instagram or Vine video that's very clever. I don't know if you've seen some of the more clever ones. That's something I'm toying with right now. You know, providing tips in 15 seconds or less or something, or it's just stop motion animation. If you've got a cool product that you want to display in a cool way. There's also, and I haven't done this quite yet, but I'm going to. Creating complex subjects and making a little pictograph out of it so that it's like in an instant you understand what it is that somebody's talking about. So let's say you've got 25 aha moments as part of your brand, your company story or your product story. If you could break that down into 25 little diagrams or graphs that are cute and fun and distinctive. I haven't seen anyone do that, by the way. Well, there's a Forbes writer that does it in her own way, but it's kind of the highbrow types of messages. But if you could break that down into describing your product, and I know this is complex. I would have to show you an example of it. And since we're on a podcast, I can't do that. But imagine breaking down your story into little pictographs that explain pictorially what it is that your product does or what problem it solves.
Interesting. Maybe you can send us an example and we'll leave the link down below.
I will certainly do that. And I'm going to be creating my own here pretty soon.
Very cool. Yeah, we could just link right to that.
So yeah. Basically, to summarize that for our listeners, it sounds like things that are A, visually rich, and B, digestible, quickly digestible.
Quickly digestible, yeah. The other thing is, okay, go ahead.
are you looking for people to send you content that you'll publish, or are you always producing the content yourself?
Well, I think I'm good. So we produce a lot of it. But if somebody comes to me with a great infographic and it's, you know, in the space that I cover, that's another thing I didn't mention, is you really want to understand what they're covering and what they're interested in. The more they have a better than, you know, I give them a 60-70% greater chance that they'll get into one of my columns. Yeah. So what I was saying is, if you could create research, and this isn't cheap, but if you had research around a subject that I was very interested in, like just somebody just sent me, and I'm going to put this into my next column, but somebody sent me social media use amongst student athletes in 2014. And they did a huge survey to 1,000 student athletes in college. And they gave me a whole breakdown of data and statistics, and they didn't make it into an infographic, but I can certainly do that. And for me, that was extremely interesting, and I know my audience will be interested in seeing what the results were to understand where to focus to reach these college athletes.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, that's something that's achievable for a startup to do that research.
Yeah, I mean, they should all be doing the voice of their industry. Are you familiar with the voice of the customer survey?
No, actually.
Okay, so that's just a survey that you send out, 15 to 20 questions, to really build what I call buyer profiles. And a couple of those questions in there should be industry-related, not just buyer-related. And you could take that industry-related content or answers, and you could package it into a short infographic, or just, you know, like they did to me here, is send me a link. There's something they published on their blog post, and I can take those statistics and I can put them into my next post to support a viewpoint that I have.
Very cool. So we talk a lot about content and audience building on our podcast, and I would love to hear from your perspective how writing at Forbes, writing a book, running an agency, how that has affected your startup.
Well, I mean, I think we have a big leg up on any startup that's out there. Because we know how to create great content, because we're constantly studying what's working, what's not out there. So I'm watching, you know, what content is moving the needle and what isn't. And if something really moves the needle, I want to take a look at it and see, well, how can we put our own unique spin on this so that we can do the same thing for our clients or for ourselves? So we're actively looking for great content on a regular basis to see what's working, what's resonating with our target audience. I mean, one thing I'm trying to figure out right now is, you know, Snapchat. If your target audience are 14 to 24-year-old girls and boys, Snapchat is where they're all at. You should be focused on that. So we're trying to figure out what's going to move the needle there. But there's as I alluded to before, we have a whole playbook of things that we know work. And that we're potentially going to publish. I have to figure out how we benefit from publishing it. But, you know, anything from trivia contests to predictions, you can go out to your user base and ask them to predict something that's going to happen in the next 12 months and either put that on your blog or feed it to a journalist like me if it's really interesting. Really the goal with content is to create content that moves your audience emotionally. And if you can move them emotionally, you're going to have a much higher likelihood that they're going to buy your product or service, at least engage with you.
Yeah, that's really great advice. So, Mark, thank you so much for coming on here and enlightening us on your content strategy here. Where can we keep up with you for listeners that want to keep up with what you're doing with Rainforest, with Forbes, with Socialize?
Yeah, great question. So there's two places really. One is blog.rainforest.com, and that's rainforest.com. It's too expensive to buy rainforest.com. Other is, I would just Google this. I would just say Forbes, Mark Fidelman, Socialized and Mobilized is the name of the column. So either one of those places are best. And yeah, or follow me on Twitter at Mark Fidelman, and you'll see everything I do.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Hold up. Do you mind? I'm trying to build a kingdom here. Walk to the store with your boy. Let's get a ginger beer. Listen here. I got some shit to sprinkle in your ear. Rip and tear the kick and snare. Whistle like Rakim was near. Independent penmanship. Sending bitch tendency. Having rich rappers to their residences. My present tense is legendary living. Like my 50 grand merch worth for what I'm given. Build an ad to it. The skill I mastered it. Handful of gravel and shit to build.